Welcome back to the Midday Show here on 98.1 KZE. It is my great pleasure to welcome director of the huge hit documentary film Bully and Amandla. And by the way, am I pronouncing that exactly right?
You actually did great. That
Okay.
was spot on.
It's pronounced Bully. Bully with See what I did?
I see what you did. I like what you did. I like what you did. Yeah.
Lee Hirsch.
Great to be with you today.
Thank you. You know, it was literally Monday morning where I was reached out to by some of our team who are just happened to be in Cape Town, South Africa this week. And they had this idea of doing this cross promotional type of thing with some radio stations out there. And I said, oh, yeah, we can do that. And they said, why don't you choose Amandla for the film club? And it's perfect, you know, with our station, because we already play Miri Makeba. We already play Hugh Masekela. We already play Ladyship Black, Mamazo. You know, we already play Paul Simon. You know? Anyway, all those South African artists. So it just made sense. I thought, let me see if Lee is available. So thank you very much. I really mean it. Did you say before we went on the air that you just came back from South Africa?
I did. I just got back, I guess, last week. Yeah. So,
what were you doing there?
Well, very, very much to the point of our conversation. My big next project is that I am doing a biopic about the great Hugh Masekela. So we were in kind of deep work on our screenplay. So I went out there and spent a couple weeks with my collaborators and just sort of honing and refining our script. And that was long in the making because I'd been caught up in doing politics here and kind of also needed to sort of cleanse the palate after the November loss. And yeah, I got to go back out and reconnect. And you know, South Africa hasn't really left my life. Like, I kind of go back every year or two and sort of find it to be the place where I go to recharge and get inspiration and be around some of the people that I love the most in the world. Mm. And so I am privileged to have been able to keep those relationships and, you know, have South Africa just be kind of a big part of my life ever since I, you know, first went there when I was 19 years old with the crazy idea of making this film.
Well, I was going to ask you, because clearly the catalyst for your love affair, I don't mean to be flip, with your love for
no, that's fair.
The country.
It is a love affair.
Okay. with South Africans, with South African music, with the country, was making Amandla back in, I'm going to guess, 2000 or so.
Yeah. Well, it started a lot earlier. I mean, the film itself took nearly 10 years to make. So, you know, I had the privilege of being there around the time of the sort of final pieces of apartheid falling and the election of Nelson Mandela and the immediate aftermath. But it was a long process to make that film. And so I think it debuted in 2002, I want to say.
Yes.
But the sort of gestation period was significantly longer.
Yeah, like any documentary. You're lucky if you can get out in a matter of 5 or 6 years. That's, you know, with some documentary projects. But so when did this idea come to you to make this documentary? It is post cultural boycott.
Yep.
Right? There are a bunch of, I would say, Western artists, such as the aforementioned Paul Simon, but, you know, David Byrne, of course, others that have been working with South African musicians already. So,
I mean, interestingly, a lot of those guys were on the other side of the cultural boycott, which is a whole other story.
Yeah,
But, you know, I guess, you know, I was a high school anti-apartheid activist, and that led me to watch a lot of things, listen to a lot of things, try and get a hold of music. And the film was really, catalyzed by just an insight of like, why are people singing in like every single news clip that I see? And why does the music feel so powerful? And seems to me like you've got sometimes thousands of people singing in four-part harmony. And I come from activist roots here in the States where we can't get one-part harmony right. And let alone, run a couple songs, to keep people's spirits going. And I was just taken by all of that and had a huge curiosity. And that led me out there with this question of, is there a film to be made? Will activists from the struggle give me the chance to make that film as an outsider? And that was really like how the process began. And it was a really exciting period of my life and exciting period in South African history. And I think a lot of people sort of saw me as this kind of crazy, wild, I used to have long hair, kind of wide-eyed kid who was going on and on about song, but people there really saw it as part and parcel to the movement. And so I think it was interesting to show up and say like, this is something really, really, really special. And people would kind of think about it for a minute and go, oh yeah, you're kind of right. Like, let's talk about it. They hadn't really stopped to process because it was so integral to Black culture and Black life. And I think it was an interesting thing to explore with people how unique it was. And that was a real starting point for unearthing the story of the songs and how they emerged and traveled and changed over time and became a kind of soundtrack to a revolution.
Dave Matthews became the film's executive producer. Pretty smart move on your part. How did that come about? And what was his, if any, what was his contribution to Amanla?
Matthews was just somebody that I wanted to reach out to because he was South African and like had influence, and I was a fan at the time. And I think through a few different people, we managed to get him a cut of the film, and he responded. And I can't really remember all the like, we're going back a little ways now. I don't
Yeah,
remember like all the like
we
all
this
the.
came together pretty
Oh, I
quickly,
mean, no, but we're going back, 20 something, 25
Exactly. So I kind
years.
of
So,
ambushed you.
no, it's okay. I mean, the biggest role I think that Dave played was helping us shape the soundtrack and releasing, a really great album and being part of that process and then helping promote the film when it came out was also really valuable. And so, and just a hell of a nice guy to get to learn from and have some support, it was much appreciated.
And so, as you alluded to earlier, now you're moving on to this film about Hume Sakela. Did you say it was a documentary or was it a
It's
non?
actually a it's a
It's
biopic.
a biopic. That's what I thought you said. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, is this stepping into new waters for you?
It
Or
really
am I
is.
mistaken? You've already made a narrative
No,
film?
I have not made a narrative film. I have worked in commercials, but I've never made a this would be my first narrative. I'm co-directing it with a great South African filmmaker named Dumisani Phakathi, who was one of my like collaborators back almost 30 years ago in those like great Wiley days of making music videos in South Africa, which was where I cut my teeth while I was trying to make the film. And so, he and I have teamed up, and it will be my first narrative. And it was something that, over the years, I had the privilege of getting to know Hugh fairly well. He was really proud of the film and did a lot of press for us and did a lot of support of the film. And we had, just been friendly over the years since the film came out. And when he wrote his book, I was like all over him for the rights to turn it into a film. And it took a while. You know, he was pretty resistant. And eventually I bugged him enough and he was like, okay, let's do this. And I was really fortunate because, you know, as you may know, he did pass a few years ago, but together we were able to decide what we wanted it to be. And that vision is what's really guided the script writing process. So it is about his early life. So it's not a cradle to grave biopic. It's a high school to like 20 years old timeline. So it's kind of like when he started learning the trumpet and became prolific, and how he got his chops and how he got to the point where he was able to and had to make this really profound decision to leave South Africa. So it's an interesting period in South African history. It's the late 50s, right as apartheid was bearing down with all of its force. You had this young man who was just sort of this amazingly talented up-and-coming player, resisting a lot of family pressure to be a doctor and be a member of the sort of what was left of the black elite at the time. And he kind of bucked all of that and became a jazz man. And that's our story. And fell in love with Miriam Makeba. And man, you know, which is amazing because, like, you know, he was like 15, 16. She was 21, 22, the biggest star in Africa, arguably the hottest woman in Africa. And so it was quite a pull for a young man. But so all of that is part of our story.
Well, you know, I as somebody who reads and listens to a lot of memoirs and bi autobiographies, I always find the journey to, you know, that place of realizing who you are, you know, and
Yeah.
what you're meant to do, and all is the fascinating part of the story. Anyway, once somebody becomes famous, and I'm not talking about Hugh Masekela necessarily at all, but I find once somebody becomes famous, they start sounding similar to each other. It's a lot of awards, a lot of you know, ritzy hotel. You know, I'm kidding, but I find that struggle, the journey, that's the price of admission, you know.
I agree. And you can tell just even in reading his book, like it's the most animated
Oh,
part of
well.
his story, you know. And you're right, like so many of the other, you know, and in his life too, you know, you get to fame and the story changes and you're starting to deal with drugs and alcohol and you know, abusive behavior and fame, you know, all that other crap that ends up usually with some form of redemption, but we get to skip all of that and just have a lot of fun. And so that I think is going to distinguish the film quite a bit.
What a rich story. Last question. I want to let you go. Do you still have a relationship with South African music today? The music coming out of there today?
I try to. I mean, it's a really fast-moving music scene, you know. I mean, what's exciting is that South Africa keeps producing really prolific and great artists. One of my closest friends is Thandiswa Mzwai, and she was one of the original members of Bongo Muffin, which was an early big Kwaito group, but is a serious solo artist today, and her new album is terrific. And she's, you know, one of the few South African artists that's on the global music world tour circuit. So she often plays New York. So I encourage people to keep a lookout for Tandiswa. There was just like a 3-page New York Times feature on her, which was
Oh.
awesome. Yeah. But you've got like Tandiswa, you've got Amapiano, which is taking like house music by storm all over the world. You've got this new artist, Tyla, who's like a young Rihanna, who's a global megastar. So South Africa seems to produce some very useful artists that people really love and cherish. So that has not changed, and my relationships are still
Merciful.
strong. Yeah. Thank God.
Well, thank you, Lee, for making this happen. This is great. I could talk to you all night. And
Thanks, man.
I can't wait to see this film develop and come out and get behind it. It's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. Thanks for your time and thanks for your
Yeah.
listeners. And if you're listening in South Africa, great to get to talk to y'all as well.
Thanks.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
This worked out great.
I know, man, you made my week. Look at that. Yeah.
Cool.